Joining us on the line is Dan Dyker, who is the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. Dan, thanks so much for chatting with us again here on The Home Run. We were chatting earlier with a political analyst who was saying that basically the war is over. How would you characterize where we are right now? Would you say that this is a turning point? Is it a pause or just the eye of the storm?
Well, perhaps all three, Paula. The war with Iran, the Iranian regime, is never over until it is absolutely over, and that means strategic victory. I would submit that Israel scored tremendous achievements in this last round of warfare with the Iranian regime. We remember that between 2024 and 2025, the Iranian regime targeted Israel three times: April, October, and now, in this last round, following Israel's counteroffensive. But that in the eyes of the Iranian regime, from a political culture standpoint, the war is never over against the West. It continues because that is the essence of jihad, holy war, is that it continues until its civilization succeeds to not only cannibalize but to force a total defeat on its enemies, and that is true from the point of view of Israel too. Israel and the United States struck together for the first time on a joint campaign on enemy territory, a massive strike and a tactical victory, I would argue, against the Iranian nuclear regime and ballistic missile program, as well as severely degrading the perceived and actual power of the regime, hitting the besieged headquarters, you know, the internal security forces headquarters, the IRGC headquarters, and many other strategic sites. However, the regime is still in place. We don't know where Khamenei is. The regime has not fallen. There are hundreds of ballistic missiles still uninjured, unaffected. There are some centrifuges. There are hundreds of enriched uranium that have been hidden away somewhere that we don't know. And so it would, in our view, require the destruction of all of the missiles and other forms of weaponry and enriched uranium, as well as causing the collapse of the regime, that ultimately should come from the inside, from the Iranian people themselves. The Iranian people got themselves into this mess in 1979. They got the world into this mess in 1979. And it's up to them to pave the way for their own free future. So the short answer is this round of war, Israel and the United States won, hands down, but it's only the first round.
Well, that was exactly what I was going to ask you, because Israeli officials are saying that the strikes, including on Iranian nuclear sites, caused significant damage, and Iran can't reactivate those facilities in the near future, but it's only in the near future. So in your view, did they go far enough or not far enough?
Paula, first of all, President Trump released today his comments from Amsterdam, from the NATO conference, that confirmed that there were actually Israeli commandos on the ground checking the Fordo site to determine the level of damage, what they call BDA, battle damage assessment, based on following the massive airstrike by the United States and leading up to that, the massive airstrikes by Israel. But we don't know for sure what the overall battle damage assessment is to the Iranian regime. But let's remember, the Iranian regime are snakes and shrewd foxes, and they have the capability at oil revenues of between $55 and $60 billion a year. They have the possibility of reconstituting their nuclear weapons program, their ballistic missile program. It'll take some time, but they have the oil revenue to do it. They have the political will to do it, and they still have the capacity. So we have to be very cautious when dealing with the Iranian octopus or the Iranian regime, octopus, to differentiate themselves, to differentiate this from the Iranian people, or the Iranian snake, as some people refer to it, because they're capable of mobilizing an international terror campaign that we have seen before. We've seen it in Latin America. We've seen it in Washington. We've seen it in Lebanon. We've seen it in Yemen. We've seen it from Syria. You know, we've seen it from Gaza. So, the, you know, the Iranian regime, don't discount their ability to unleash chaos, murder, mayhem, and terror around the world, even though they are bloodied and they are, and the regime is severely compromised right now.
Do you think that the opportunity for regime change has been missed? Because, of course, now what we're going to witness is the regime directing its frustration inward by cracking down harder on its own population.
Paula, it depends on a number of factors. Number one, it depends on the Iranian opposition leadership. And as you probably know, as a straight-A student of Middle East affairs.
Oh, well, thank you. I love the way you laugh as you say that.
I remember your wonderful commentary and journalistic work from Jerusalem.
Thank you.
So, but in all seriousness, it depends first and foremost on the Iranian opposition leadership, which we both know the biggest opposition to the to the Iranian opposition is the Iranian opposition itself. They have proven themselves to be a very difficult coalition to coalesce, great suspicions, and very difficult to unite. However, I have been in touch with senior elements of the Iranian opposition, which is called the Iranian Transition Council, and they are really making a concerted effort to cobble together a very broad coalition of opposition leaders. We've seen public announcements and declarations by who's called RP3, Reza Pahlavi III, the son of the Shah, of the former Shah, and we also know that this potential regime change is also dependent on outside forces. Without going into too much detail, right now is the moment where elements in the free world, the powers in the West, have to engage in a shadow war, a secret war, diplomatic warfare, political warfare, psychological operations, in order to weaken the regime at every turn. And it can be done. But ultimately, the regime change has to come from within Iran itself. It can happen. It really requires a united Iranian leadership with unity of purpose and unity of capability.
Dan, I want to just ask you about the U.S. role, because the U.S. played a complex role in this war, from brokering a ceasefire to carrying out its own strikes on Iranian targets. How do you interpret America's current strategy, and do you think that Israel can rely on U.S. backing in the long term?
Difficult questions. Now, first of all, the United States, since 1979, incredibly, I must say, has not viewed the Iranian regime as a direct existential threat to the United States. And I think that it militates towards an analysis of the United States as being somewhat of a politically isolationist country, separated by a huge ocean. It's our view that the United States bombing, I mean, President Trump's decision to bring, you know, six B-2s and bomb, use the mother of all bombs, that 30,000-pound bomb, those bombs to penetrate Fordow, Isfahan, and Natanz uranium enrichment sites, is a major watershed moment for the United States, especially for the first time in 46 years that they've taken such action on Iranian regime soil. Having said that, it seems clear to us at the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs that the president is trying to balance his interests at home. This was sort of an America first type of attack, where he said from the outset, we are not going to allow the Iranian regime to achieve nuclear weapons. And the way he prevented that is by bombing, the fissile material that goes onto a nuclear weapon. And he did it efficiently and he did it successfully. It seems that the president is not going to go beyond that. The last thing the president needs from an internal political standpoint, to the Make America Great base that he has, the America First base that he has to satisfy, is to get America involved in any kind of boots on the ground or extended air campaign, war of attrition against the Iranian regime. So it seems for now that America has done its part from its own point of view, and I believe that there is an understanding between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump that following this ceasefire, which is only a ceasefire in the minds of the West, of Israel, and could, because the Iranian regime does not understand or accept the Western notion of a ceasefire. For them, it's only a temporary halt in hostilities. It's called a hudna. That there is an understanding between the United States and Israel is that if the Iranian regime violates this ceasefire-hudna, then Israel would have the full backing of the United States to attack the Iranian regime again. And I think that's very, very substantial development because Israel's national security concept has changed since October 7, 2023, and the invasion massacre against Israel. Israel has introduced the notion of prevention, and that plays into exactly this moment, that if the Iranian regime attempts to restore the Russian S-300 anti-aircraft system, or, you know, they try to restore, repair, and refurbish their nuclear development sites, Israel will destroy them, and Israel will have the backing of the United States and I would assume, by extension, the major Western alliance.